Good morning and welcome to our assembly. Thank you for being here. I can't even see that clock, James. Take my glasses off, I can't see it, so it doesn't matter. Among the things that the elders have asked me to talk about this year is the subject of strong families. And I'm going to entitle the next few lessons I'm going to deliver, Forging Strong Families. Something that I may not have mentioned before, my grandfather was a blacksmith. And I imagine that's exactly the kind of thing he kind of worked with. You see in that picture there, pounding metal into shape. We use metal for things because metal is strong. You can't make skyscrapers without steel. But even steel has to be shaped, has to be forged and made into the right shape in order to withstand the pressures and tensions and stresses that whatever you're building is going to undergo. And a family is exactly the same way. A family needs to be forged. Now, I don't have a single thing in my possession that my grandfather ever worked on or made in terms of steel. But I'm here. I'm here. I'm the only thing I got that came from my grandfather. And whereas my grandfather was not perfect in a lot of ways, there's one thing that he definitely was, and that was he was a Christian. And as I understand it, he wasn't a particularly good one of those. But he insisted upon it. And that passed on to my father, and it passed on to me. And I appreciate that. I'd rather have that than anything else my grandfather made. We want strong families. We want godly families. But strong families and godly families are not going to happen by accident. You can't just get you a family and say, well, I got a family. And so it's naturally just by reason of the fact that it's my family that it's going to be a good family, a strong family. And when we say strong, of course, that implies something, doesn't it? Strong means it needs to bear up. And that implies stress and strains and struggles and strife for strength. And strength doesn't happen by accident. Strong muscles don't happen by accident. Strong buildings don't happen by accident. Strong families don't happen by accident. They must be made, forged. Forged by deliberate process of applied wisdom. You have to have an intention, a plan. You have to make a decision to say, I want my family to be a strong family. Strong in terms of its cohesion, strong in terms of its love and respect, strong in terms of its service to God. That is my plan, that is my intention. What am I going to do to get there? Because it's not going to happen by accident. If we want the result, we have to follow the process. It's true in every aspect of walk of life. You want the result, you have to follow the process. There is a process for having strong families. And we are given divine wisdom, God's wisdom in His Word, in order to help us understand what that process is. And if we will follow that process of God's divine wisdom and applying it, then we can have the result that we want, the strong families that we want. That's what I want to talk about for a few moments this morning and in some subsequent lessons. Strong families are the result of a firm and unflinching commitment. That's the primary point that I want to talk about this morning. Commitment. If you want your family to be strong, you have to make a commitment. Your spouse has to make a commitment. And together you must make a commitment. Without that commitment being firm and unshakable and unflinching, as I say, then chances are you're not going to have the strong family that you want. You know, we live in a day and time in which commitments are easily made and easily broken. I think the catchphrase of our time that speaks to this most are the words, "We'll see where this goes." I don't know how this is going to work out, but we'll see where it goes. Well, that's not commitment. I want you to read this passage with me in Ruth chapter 1. It's a beautiful passage, often read in weddings. It's not particularly about a wedding between a man and a woman. It's about the relationship between a woman and her daughter-in-law. But they are family. And in this relationship, Ruth makes a commitment to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And this is what Ruth says. You know, they both lost their husbands. Naomi lost her husband. Ruth lost her husband. That connection of mother and mother-in-law is tenuous at best at this point because the son is dead. There's every reason to believe that Ruth will go back to her family, find another husband. But this is what Ruth says to Naomi. Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God my God." Now here's Naomi, and she's heading back to her home country. She has nothing here in Moab. You know, she has nothing to support her. She's going back to where she came from. And Ruth, this sorrowful, pitiful sight, and Ruth and the other daughter-in-law, they're following behind Naomi, and Naomi's saying, "Go back, go back." And Ruth says, "Don't tell me that. Don't urge me to go back. Wherever you go, that's where I'm going to go. And it doesn't matter what happens. Doesn't matter what we experience or what we go through. I'm going with you." And she goes on to say that in verse 17, "Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." You see the level and measure of Ruth's commitment? This is a daughter-in-law to a mother-in-law. What do you think engendered that kind of commitment on the part of Ruth? Well, I imagine there's a lot of things you could speculate about. I assume that she loved her. She cared about her. That they had a relationship together that she valued and she regarded as precious. And she was genuinely concerned about Naomi's welfare, how she would fare without anybody to be with her. And she, but whatever prompted Ruth to make that level of commitment, the commitment was genuine and firm and resolved. And once made, you know, you say those kinds of words, "May God do so to me and more." If I don't go with you, even if it means I die. That is the level and measure of Ruth's commitment to that relationship, to that family, such as it existed at that time. Think about that. Learning from Ruth's commitment. You know, Ruth made a firm commitment. Seems fairly obvious. I don't think it was flippant. I don't think it was one of those, we'll see where this goes kind of thing. She meant it. She meant what she was saying. I have no prospects here, Ruth is saying. I don't know how this is going to work out. So it wasn't based on some certainty of a happy outcome. And that's exactly what a lot of people think a family or a marriage is. You make a commitment to a marriage expecting and thinking there's going to be a happy outcome. And based upon that expectation, well, I make a commitment. But that's not what Ruth is saying. Ruth has no certainty that this is going to work out, that it's going to be good. In fact, she has every reason to believe that it's not going to be very good at all. But that doesn't change the fact that she makes the commitment and that she means it. In fact, her commitment anticipated hardships, expected them. Any reasonable person in her position would know that two widows may or may not find a soft landing place, and probably won't. And I want you to notice that it didn't allow for any escape clauses. She didn't say, well, I'll go with you and make sure you get home, and we'll see how it goes over there. And if it doesn't work out, I can always come back. That would be a very reasonable thing to say, wouldn't it? That's not what she said. She said, I'm with you until I die. And wherever you're buried, I'm going to be buried there. You see, the problem that so many people have with their families these days is that it's just kind of a, you know, it's just kind of a convenient arrangement. And when it ceases to be convenient, it ceases to be an arrangement. And that's not how you build a strong family. It's not. But I want you to also think about this, that Ruth's commitment, born out of perhaps love and concern and a genuine bond, it was firm, it was unqualified, it was see it to the end kind of a commitment, and it just so happened that that very kind of commitment got Ruth and Naomi to a very, really wonderful place. Not knowing that that's what would happen, but it did. And so what I'm suggesting to you is that through our faith in God and our faith in His wisdom, that we can have strong families. But it takes a willingness to make that kind of commitment. Commitment to our spouse. Of course, as I've mentioned before, the marriage is the core of the family. And the core of the marriage really is that commitment between husband and wife. You can call it various things. You can call it love. So very often people confuse that word love, though, with affection, with feeling. And it's not the kind of love I'm talking about. I'm talking about really the commitment kind of love. The one where you say, I care about you whether I like you or not. Because I'm committed to you. Commitment to our spouse, very core of, you know, when you're forging and pounding away on that family, at the very core of it is that commitment to your spouse. And we first began reading about this in Genesis chapter 2, where God institutes the whole arrangement of marriage and of family, and He makes the first woman, and He brings the woman to the first man. And you know, He says, I've made this woman from your very own flesh. And for this cause, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. A woman is made from the flesh of man, and when man and woman is joined together in marriage, they are joined together like one flesh. Shall cleave to his wife, and you may have heard this talked about before, about the meaning of the term. It means to cling, to hold fast, to stick together. Very much like a blacksmith would take two pieces of iron, he would heat them up till they're hot, and they start to get a little bit liquid even. And he puts them together, and he pounds them together, and that metal just melts together and sticks together until it becomes one piece of metal, inseparable. That's what we're talking about. You stick to her. You stick to him. That doesn't mean it's easy. Anything in that verse say that that's going to be easy? That that's going to be something that just gets easier and easier and you just have it? No. It's just what it is. Cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. One flesh. I'll say more about that more in a moment. But that's pretty close. It's hard to get any more closer than that. That's a reference to the union. To the joining together, the amalgamation, so much more so that it's not two separate people, it's one person. In many ways, in many aspects, it's one person. What matters to one matters to the other. What hurts one hurts the other. Matthew chapter 19, verse 6, is on this basis of this very passage in Genesis that Jesus makes this declaration, Matthew 19, 6. He quotes that passage and he says, "So they are no longer two, but one flesh." No longer two, but one. "Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." Now there is a legitimate cause for divorce, and we're not talking about that today. Jesus goes on to talk about that in Matthew 19, but I'm talking about the commitment today. And the commitment is, you're no longer two, you're one. You're one. And God made you one, you're one, you're pounded together, and that's the deal. And that's the commitment. And to the degree that two people come together and they make that commitment to each other and they are firm and resolved like Ruth was to her mother-in-law and they're going to see this through and whatever it takes, come what may, this is who we are. We are one flesh together and nothing is going to change that. To the degree that that kind of commitment is met and kept, that is a strong, strong family. And I've seen a lot of people do it, and I've seen a lot of people fail at it. And when it's done well and done right, it is a wonderful, beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing for the community. It's a beautiful thing for children. It's a beautiful thing for the church. It's a beautiful thing. Commitment. That's at the core of that family. Malachi chapter 2. Don't think that people in the Bible didn't get divorced because they did. Don't think they didn't have a problem with this thing because they did. And Malachi, one of the prophets, talks about this. And he says in Malachi chapter 2 and verse 14, "Because the Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant." He's talking about divorce. The passage is talking about divorce. Malachi talks about divorce in a couple of different passages. And here's one of them. And he says, what you have done is you have been faithless to your companion and your wife by covenant. Now, Malachi is not a marriage counselor. Malachi doesn't give any advice about how to improve one's marriage or what you should have done or what you could have done just in case, you know, you had problems. And there are things that you can point to in the Bible to teach you about how to improve your marriage. And we'll talk about some of that in a subsequent lesson, because part of having a strong marriage and forging that strong marriage and that strong family is working at it. It takes work. It doesn't happen by accident. But it begins with a commitment. What Malachi does talk about is the breaking of that commitment. He doesn't say, well, maybe if I understood why you divorced your wife, maybe if you explained the nature of your relationship, maybe I could understand. He doesn't say that. He says, you have been faithless to your companion and your wife by covenant. You've been faithless. That commitment, man, you've got to take it serious. It's a covenant. You know what a covenant, you know how seriously God takes covenants? Or this passage, Proverbs 2:17, talks about it from another side, from the standpoint of a woman. It talks about the strange woman, as King James Version talks about her, the foreign woman, or the loose woman. She's out there loose. Why is she loose? Because she got unloosed from somebody. And he describes her this way, Proverbs 2:17, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. Man, that's pretty strong language, isn't it? The covenant she made before God. And again, doesn't go into any details about what excuse she made for making that decision. But the consequence is the same nonetheless. Commitment. An unshakable, unflinching commitment. Ephesians chapter 5, 28-29, building again on the figure of the joining together of the flesh. Husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. And we'll talk about this more when we talk about working on your marriage, about what you do to forge the bond between you and your wife, and not simply making an agreement and then doing nothing, and taking it for granted, and ignoring it, and letting it dilapidate and weaken and rust. But it begins with a commitment that you have to keep. And knowing that you got to keep that commitment should prompt you, as we'll talk about later, prompt you to do what you need to do to keep the commitment. But it begins with a commitment. And then he says this, though, about that commitment. Love your own wives as your own bodies. No one ever hated his own flesh. How committed are you to your body? You comfortable with keeping your body? You ready to walk away from it? You ready to just, you know, say, you know, I just don't like my body anymore. I think I'll just get rid of my body. My body and I have a rough relationship, and we're just not really cooperating, me and my body. And so I guess I'll just get rid of my body. Nobody does that. That's what Paul says. You don't mistreat your own body. You don't ignore or walk away from your own body. And that's exactly the kind of commitment you need to have to your spouse. What commitment does for us, that kind of firm, unshaking commitment, it gets us through the hard times, because there's always going to be hard times. Some of them are worse than others. Some people have gone through very difficult times. Some, not so much. You know, my wife told me about something she read the other day, and it kind of clicked on a light for me. She said that according to studies, the consumption of cereal is declining. And they tried, of course, the cereal companies are all about selling cereal, so they wanted to try to find out why are people not buying as much cereal. And they found out one of the reasons why is because millennials, people who've come of age in the last 10 years, they don't like washing bowls. They can't be bothered to wash a bowl and a spoon. And so they'd rather grab a breakfast bar or something that they can just eat and then throw the wrapper away. They don't want to wash the bowl. That doesn't bode well for our future as a people. I'm not saying you have to eat cereal. But you do have to work. and it gets hard sometimes. Family, marriage, it gets hard, and you got to keep a commitment. And that commitment sometimes is the only thing that keeps you going. When you don't have any other reasons. You don't even want to. But you do, because you made a commitment. And notice I say it gets you through the hard times, because it won't always necessarily be that way. Things can improve, they can change, they often do. And they will. If you'll follow God's divine wisdom in respect to your marriage. But sometimes all that keeps you going is your commitment. And that's a good thing, because we need that. It also eliminates distrust. You know, if you have the mentality, if people in a marriage have the mentality, well, we'll see where this goes, and if it doesn't work out, well, then, you know, we'll go our separate ways. Well, when you have that mentality, and you know your partner has that mentality, what you've got is you've got already the seeds of distrust, the seeds of a willingness to contemplate the prospect that, you know, this gets too hard, we can just bail on this. If you got onto an airplane, and you saw the pilot get on, he's wearing a parachute, how would you feel about that? How committed is this guy to staying with this plane? I don't have a parachute. Why has he got a parachute? Well, we need to know, when we get married, we say the words, for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health. We say those words. The more that you have confidence that you mean them and that you know your spouse means them, that throws you together in a mix with a whole lot more determination to do what it takes to make yourself successful in your marriage. It forces you. It forces you to work on making things better. I'm not saying a commitment no matter what. I'm saying a commitment no matter what, because you're going to do whatever it takes. You're going to do whatever it takes. And your partner is going to do whatever it takes. And when you have that kind of commitment, then you do whatever it takes. And you make things better. When the boat is sinking, you plug the holes. When the plane is going down and you have no parachute, you do whatever you can to make that plane fly. And when it comes to marriage, you can. It's within your control and the control of your spouse. Now, I know it takes both working together. I know that, but that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a commitment that we make to each other. It forces us to work on things, making them better. And it gives us a chance to see us through to a better day. And I've known people who've gone through rough patches and they got through them and things got better. And in some cases, in many cases, it gets great. And people can look back and say, I'm so glad I didn't bail. I'm so glad I stuck this out because things are good between us and we got these wonderful children. And that's just the way it goes. And if if every single time things start getting rough and you bail, then what do you got? You got one failed family after another. But that's not the way it's supposed to be. Commitment to our children. I'll just say a few things about that and stop. You know, when you have children, you're making a commitment to your children. You're saying, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to raise you. I'm going to love you. You're my child. And it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter how difficult or how tough things get. I just want to quote this one passage in 2 Kings chapter 4. It's a great example of this woman, a Shunammite woman, who the prophet Elisha came to know, and she wanted a son, and so she asked Elisha, and Elisha said, you're going to have a son. She had a son. The boy grew up, and then one day his head started pounding, and apparently he died of some aneurysm or something. He died. And it says here in 2 Kings, let's see here. Yeah, I can see now. 2 Kings, chapter 4, verse 20. It says, the father lifted him up and brought him to the mother, and the child sat on her lap till noon. What a pathetic picture that would be, wouldn't it? That woman holding her child, not having any way of doing anything about what's afflicting him, just holding on to him till he died. He died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. She didn't say anything to anybody. She just laid her dead son on the bed and she went outside and she went and she found the man of God. She made that journey. She found him. And it says in verse 27, when she came to the mountain of the man of God, she caught hold of his feet. And Gehazi came to push her away. But the man of God said, leave her alone, for she is in bitter distress. He recognized that something had gone wrong. And Elisha said, here, I'll give you my staff to my servant. He'll take the staff. And she said, no. She grabbed hold of him, wouldn't let go. And she said this. The child's mother said, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. You are going to come with me. You're going to come. And he did. Elisha went with her. And he raised that child from the dead. Now, I say that to illustrate my point. You know, you make a commitment to a child. And that commitment has to be unflinching and firm. And it has to be. And we've got the problem in our society of a lot of people having children that they're not really committed to. They're not committed to their marriages. They're not committed to the children that come. And that's not good. That makes for no families, not just weak families, no family. And you got to have that commitment to a child. I'll stop there, and I just want to say one thing. We buried a sister yesterday. Barbara Matthews. And she was a mother who raised a strong family. Because of her commitment to her husband, her commitment to her children, her commitment to God. That's the part I didn't get to talk about this morning. I'll have to talk about it later. Because part of it is a commitment to God. It's a big part of it, you know. But she had a son. I don't know if some of you may not know this. She had a son who was mentally and physically handicapped. And she took care of that boy for 30 years. He got to be a big boy. And he had to be carried everywhere. And Arch and Barbara would come to church and bring that boy. And they would go to every service and bring that boy. And they would go to meetings and they would bring that boy. And she would take care of that boy day and night for 30 years. And she told Peg one time that even after he died, a lot of times in the night, she would think that she could hear him and she'd have to get up. She made a commitment. She kept it. And now by the power and grace of God, she and that son get to have a life. A joyous life that will last forever. And that's the point. That's the point of family. That's the point of life in general. We got to make a commitment and see it through. Because it's all leading to something wonderful. If you want to make a commitment to Jesus Christ, to the family of God, an eternal family, a strong family, if you want to make that commitment this morning by obeying the gospel, give your life to the Lord by declaring your faith in Jesus, turning away from sin, and being baptized. And in that baptism, make a commitment to serve the Lord. And it will lead to something truly wonderful. Come forward if you want to. Say that you will as we stand and sing.